This presentation of Basic ABA was created by Milestones Autism Organization, a nonprofit organization dedicated to train parents and professionals of best practice approaches to working with children on the autism spectrum. If you would like to find out more information about Milestones or find autism resources, go to www.milestones.org. My name is Kirsten Johnson, and my information is also on milestones.org. This is part 3 of Basic ABA. We'll be discussing about what is reinforcement. We're going to talk about what is reinforcement. The definition is an event that occurs after a behavior or response that increases the likelihood of that behavior or response to occur again in the future. We are reinforced throughout our day, and we provide reinforcements throughout our day for other people around us. That is why we do the dishes. That is why we cut the lawn. That is why we go to work. That is why we are productive at work. Why we have relationships with different people. There are two types of reinforcement. The first is a primary reinforcement, and those are unlearned. We are intrinsically motivated, such as food and drink. When a baby is born, giving them water can be reinforcing for them, or food, because it's just something that's unlearned. We didn't have to teach that. The other type of reinforcement then is, of course, learned reinforcers, such as maybe social praise, a smile, a hug, being proud of what you've done, using the token system, such as money. We'll also be mainly talking about positive reinforcement, and that means that we are going to reinforce a response in order to increase that response over time. Unfortunately, reinforcement can happen in different ways. So giving a child attention for a correct response can cause an increase of that response happening again, but also giving attention to a child who's doing something inappropriate can also increase the likelihood of that response happening again. So be aware that when we talk about positive reinforcement, it can go towards making an appropriate response happen more often or an inappropriate response to happen more often. An example would be that if you're at the grocery store and your child's sitting nicely in the cart and you give them a cookie and tell them, "You're sitting so nicely," then they're more likely to be appropriate throughout the time at the grocery store. But if the child starts to cry and you give them a cookie to try to quiet them, then you're reinforcing them to cry, because then you're telling them, "If you cry, I will reinforce you with a cookie in the future." Children on the autism spectrum usually are less likely to be reinforced by social reinforcements, such as verbal praise, you know, "You did it, you put it in," or, you know, maybe tickles, or, you know, being able to choose an activity. So sometimes when you're first starting to work with a child on the spectrum, you may have to pair them with something that's more tangible, such as maybe food or candy, drinks, toys, videos. And when I say pair it, I mean when you're giving them that item, that desired item, you pair it with a behavior-specific praise, which means if they're putting in the right color, you say, "Nice putting in red." Or if they're reaching for a cookie, you say, "Nice asking for the cookie." That way you're describing what they are doing that is correct. And then hopefully when you pair the two together, the tangible items with the social praise, then you'll be able to use praise more often, which is much more socially acceptable than handing your child a cookie. Sometimes the reinforcement is embedded. So if they were to see a cookie and they would say, "Can I have a cookie?" And then receiving the cookie would be the reinforcement. Now to teach it, you may have to provide another reinforcement on top of that. "Nice saying cookie." Okay, so they know that that's why they're getting the cookie. But, you know, at some point then it's just receiving the cookie is the reinforcement. A goal is to have intrinsic reinforcement, the satisfaction of being right, of completing the puzzle, of having pride, making someone else happy. That's something that they need to learn how to do. I would keep a running list of what is reinforcing for your child and look and see what they're playing with. Find out by putting things in front of them and seeing which ones they reach for. If it's an older child, you'll basically have a better idea because you can see that maybe they love to play video games or a computer game, or maybe going outside and doing an activity like swinging, and those would be listed as reinforcement also. If you're having a hard time finding typical reinforcements, you may have to use things that are stimulating for them. So if it's a toy that maybe spins or makes a certain noise, if it's a highly desirable item, then you may have to use that at the beginning, but always pairing it with something that's more appropriate. If you are just starting and you have a tangible item that you're going to use, and they're going to have to be able to give it back, that's the difficult thing about using a toy and not something that's consumable, then you're going to have to teach them that when they give it back, you're going to give it back again at some other time. So you'd spend a period of time where you would give them the item and let them play with it, and then say, "Mommy's turn," or "Daddy's turn," and then take it, look at it, and then quickly give it back and say, "Johnny's turn," and then let them play with it for a period of time and go back and forth. And at first they might be very, very upset, but after a while they'll realize that they're going to get it back. And make sure you reinforce them high when they're doing a good job without having tantrums. This is really important to do before you start teaching a skill, because you don't want them having tantrums every time you take a reinforcement back. If you're having a hard time finding things that are reinforcing, you may also include just getting a break from working on the skill as a reinforcement. You should also make sure you put these items away so the child can't use them other times during the day, because otherwise it comes saturated and loses its value. So if you have a bin, put them up high and only use it when you're working on certain skills. If you do use edibles, try to make sure you break them down in the small pieces you can. And try not to pick things that are too chewy or that the child has sensory issues with. Make sure that when you're teaching something new, that you use high desirable reinforcers and that you reinforce immediately after the response so that it is paired with that response. If you wait too long, something may happen between the time of the response and the reinforcement that could be reinforced accidentally. And then, of course, you want to start working at a delayed response where the child maybe has to do two or three correct responses before they get a reinforcement, or they start using the token system. We'll talk more about that later. Okay, our first question. Tell me which one could not be considered a reinforcement. A, giving a child a cookie to quiet them in the store. B, taking a toy away that is being used inappropriately. Or C, giving a high five for a correct answer. Now the answer is B, that would not be considered a reinforcement. If you were thinking A, remember that even though you are increasing the likelihood of a bad response or an inappropriate response, doesn't mean the cookie is not still a reinforcement. Okay, there's something I like to call the art of reinforcement. Now, in ABA terms, it's called differential reinforcement, and you use it to shape responses. So what I mean shaping is, if you want a child to say cookie, but the child cannot communicate, then just reaching could be the first step. And then reaching for the cookie and making attempt of a sound and reinforcing that. And then so you're reinforcing that for a while, and then you're trying to get more of a sound. So you're waiting a little bit to see if you can get maybe a kuh sound and then a cook sound. And so you're slowly trying to shape cookie. And then as soon as you get the word cookie, then you're going to shape I want cookie. And so you have to do this. It's difficult because you have to vary. It's a slow process of trying to pause and wait to see if you can get a little bit more after you know that they can do the last goal that you had. So when I talk about differential reinforcement or the art of reinforcement, I want to talk about it in when you want to teach a child to ride a bike. So let's take a typical child that you want to teach to ride. First thing you do is it is a very, very hard thing, and you know it's hard for a child. So just attempting and getting on a bike, even though you're holding onto the back and you're basically holding that child on, you give a lot of high reinforcement. You're praising them. You're telling them that they're doing a great job and how awesome they are, even though you are basically holding them on that bike. But you want them to have a feeling of of success, that they're doing great, because you want them to continue forward in the becoming more independent. Now they've been doing that for a while, and so you're starting to let off on the big high reinforcements, and you're starting to kind of teach them by maybe start taking your hand off a little bit. Okay, and then you're trying to reinforce them, but not the same hip, hip, hooray, look at you, you're doing so great, because you're trying to get them to the next step. All right, so you're having a moderate kind of reinforcement of, wow, you're doing better, wow, look at you. All right, now you finally have let go, and the child is doing it on their own. Then you go back up to a very high reinforcement again, because now they've gone to the next step. They've become independent of you holding onto the bike. And so even though you've kept the reinforcement going this whole time, you went from a very, very high reinforcement to encourage them to try this hard task to a moderate, because if we have kept it high the whole time, there's nothing to push them to want to do better. And then as soon as they get to be independent, you go way high again. And then now they've been riding the bike for maybe throughout the day or a couple days. So then you go back to a maintaining kind of reinforcement or encouragement. Wow, look at you. Man, you're riding your bike all by yourself. That is so great. And so we continue then to encourage them that they're doing, you know, and then of course that starts to fade off. And every once in a while there's a new skill of being able to stop or turn or go long distances. And so we continue to do reinforcement to shape the behavior as it becomes more complicated. So again, at first, it must be immediately after response when you reinforce. And then you're going to slowly increase the duration between the reinforcement. So you can't always reinforce immediately afterwards, because you would be exhausted all day if you're always having to sit there and reinforce. And so maybe you start putting pennies in the jar for each time that they do two or three correct answers. And then for every 5 pennies, they get to go outside and go on the swing. Okay. There's also first then boards. You say, you know, you have a piece of paper with a line between it. And then you can either write or have a picture and say, on the left, first, we're going to do colors, and then we're going to go outside and play, or something that they want to do. And that's a great way of teaching a schedule, because then they'll start understanding the concept of first and then. And then you can even just start saying the words, first, we're going to do colors, and then we're going to go outside, when they get to be at a point where they can just understand it auditorily. But we know children on the spectrum are very visual, so it's still important, even up into the age of, you know, when they're in elementary grades, they still have that visual to look at. It helps as a prompt or a reminder. And then there's a token board. That's what a lot of tutors or schools use, where they can put something up on a board to show how many more they have, so they can see, oh, I need 5 more, and then I get to go do what it is they want to do. But you have to make sure when you use a token board that they know what the reinforcement is at the end. And when they put the pennies in, that they know how many and what they get to do when all the pennies are in the jar. It'd be kind of nice if you had the 5 pennies in front of you so that they can see each one being taken away. Some children like to put things on, and some of them like to take the token off. See which one your child prefers. It is important to note that if you use a token board or putting pennies in a jar for correct responses, that you never, never take them out or take them off because they've done something wrong. Because then you're teaching them that even though they do things that are right, that it could be possibly taken away. Slowly fade the reinforcement to become as natural, as embedded as possible. You want to start thinking about reinforcing like a teacher in a classroom would. Because I've seen a lot of parents who reinforce really, really well at home. And then when the children go to school, they don't have the big hoopla for everything they do. And so they have to be prepared that, you know, and although the teacher should still have those reinforcements in place, those things that they already know how to do that you're still maintaining, that you may want to stop doing all the hoorays and yahoos because they're going to get there and they're going to be disappointed. Okay. And you want to start doing more intermittent reinforcement because it maintains the skill. So you want to praise every so often. So if your child's in a room, and I think this is where people forget to reinforce, is that their child's playing nicely and they don't go in there and say, "You're doing such a great job. I think that's awesome." And even go on and give them a high five or maybe giving them a snack going, "You know what? You were playing so nicely. Look, you're doing the puzzle so nicely. I'm going to give you a cracker." Okay. And this would be something out of the blue. And the more you do that, the more likely that they don't know when to expect a reinforcement. So they're going to continue trying to do that behavior in hopes of a positive reinforcement within that time period. So that is the best way to maintain behaviors that have already been learned. If a child becomes frustrated or disinterested, you need to increase the level or frequency of reinforcement. So you're going to have to pick it up. Right, especially if the child's having a bad day, you might even want to go back to something easier. Now, you don't want to completely throw it out the window and say, "We're not going to do it at all," because the child may learn that if I break down or I cry, that I don't have to do any work. You might want to make it only two things. He doesn't know that you want to do 10 things today. You might only have him do two things or give him bigger breaks between them. But once you decide you're going to work on something, then you need to try to follow through and do as many as you can. And whether you have to give more reinforcement or make it easier and then go into something harder. You've probably heard about this. If you're working on something harder with flashcards, let's say division, and you know it's hard for your child to do division, then you might do a few multiplication problems first if that's easier for them, and then throw in a couple division ones and then go back to multiplication so that they feel successful, they're feeling good, you've got the momentum up, and then start working on the ones that are harder. Okay, so you're using reinforcement to gain momentum. And again, you can shorten work requests or make it easier so they can have success. You want to make them feel successful when they're done, even if you're helping them. Knowing what reinforces your child and how to reinforce is the most crucial part of the discrete trial. And you want to know how you're going to reinforce before you present the direction or the SD. Remember that reinforcement preferences, they can change. They can change very quickly, so you want to have lots of different options around you. When I've gone to different parents' houses to work with their children, I'll hide them behind things and underneath and in my pockets, because even if I have two things and they don't like either one, I'm in big trouble if it's not going to be something that they want, because then they're going to be like, "This isn't really worth the task that you're asking." So this is the last question for part three. What helps when a child becomes frustrated? A, go back to something easier and then try it. B, give up for now and maybe try again later. Or C, explain why you're working so hard. And of course, the answer is A, go back to something easier and then try. Please do not give up and then not go back and try again, because what happens is that the child will learn that if they become frustrated and upset, that they can get out of doing the work. So even if you go back and you do one successfully, that will definitely help the child realize that they can't get out of it by throwing tantrums. Parents really strive to have a relationship with their child. And so if you're on the floor and You're playing with the train and you're doing something that makes that child happy and laugh, then, you know, continue doing it and then try to teach them why you're doing it, little things. And like going under, put it under. You have them do it one time, helping them do it, and then do the funny thing that they like that you do with the train. And then you're making yourself a reinforcement. And a lot of times when I see parents teach this way around a particular thing the child enjoys doing, and then that child actually tries to get the parent to do that activity with them, bring the train over to the parent to say, come on, let's do train, not realizing that actually when you're playing train, you're trying to teach a lot of the different skills you want to work on. So if you make it fun and you're doing like working with a water table and you know they love working with water, and then you're putting a lot of the different skills you want to teach during the water play and making it fun. And when you find things that make your children laugh by being silly, I mean, kids love it when their parents are silly, and what's silly for one child may not be silly for another. And then you've built a relationship. This is the end of part 3. In part 4, we're going to talk about what prompting is and how it can help teach your child the desired skills.